Hello, everybody. So I'm sure there's quite a few have been wondering, where have I been? Well, to be honest with you, I had to take a little bit of a break from podcasting because I was a little talked out, and I have been figuring out where do I want to take this podcast forward moving into 2022. I was talked out. I wasn't quite sure that what I was saying, what I was doing was being very effective. So I took a break. I rested up. I recalibrated. And you know what? I've got one more podcast episode for the end of this year that is specifically meant for HR people because the Best Practices in Human Resources podcast is now no longer going to be just for HR people. It's going to be for leaders, entrepreneurs, and CEOs as well. So get ready for that as we come into the new year. But I'm going to leave this very, very important message for you guys this year. You know I love you. This subject matter has come up in the last week. And this morning on my walk, I was inspired to talk about it. So framing this up, it's like five, I wake up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, sometimes 4 in the morning, depends on what time the dog gets me up to go out. And then we go out and we do a 45-minute walk first thing in the morning. That's what we do. And I was in my alpha state of mode and I got inspired to talk about this. And this is for you guys. So if you are, this is something that I've been battling with for a long time. And this is for you. So this is something to think about as we wrap up the year. How can you get yourself also set up in case you have to make a major move? And it's my last full HR person episode, just for you guys, just for HR folks, right? So know this, right? Because next year we got all sorts of really great content coming down the pike. So it's not just going to be for HR people, it's also going to be for CEOs as well, entrepreneurs and leaders. So listen. Have a wonderful Christmas. Spend time with your families. It's been another insane, stupid year. And you know what? You guys have gotten through it. Y'all have done just an amazing job. And we will talk to you in 2022. Love you guys. Okay, so today I'm going to talk to you guys about something that I keep running into quite a bit. And I'm actually out. You're gonna laugh. I'm actually out. It's like 5:30 in the morning. I'm looking at the moon over the ocean, which is just amazing. And we're taking our morning walk. And I now work out 2 times a day. So yeah, it's a busy day. Anyway, the thing I want to talk to you guys about is something that comes up all the time with HR folks. And it is one of the biggest obstacles and the biggest questions, the most frequent and common question I get. And people don't really know how to deal with it. And I'll be honest with you, I struggled with it too. And I still, to this day, I'm looking for the answer. Like, there's got to be, in my mind, there's got to be an answer. I don't give up easy. I don't know if you've noticed that or not. I don't give up easy, right? If there's something out there that's stuck in my craw, I will consistently, even though maybe I don't actively work on it every day or every week, it will stay on my mind until I come up with something, a solution, a partial solution, a nugget, a best practice, or something that will help me figure this out. So the thing that I get all the time, is what happens, like how do I handle it when a leader makes a bad decision? So let me, and I'll get into this a little bit deeper. So look, we're fix-it people in HR. That's just what we do, right? We're here to fix problems. That's what we do, day in, day out. We fix problems. We fix problems. Somebody comes up, They don't know how to handle something, we go in there, we talk to them, we help them figure it out, we help them fix it. That's what we do. Somebody can't find a paycheck, doesn't have a paycheck, needs a whatever, right? Needs a another one or replacement. We know how to fix that, right? So, but the thing that people get stuck on is, how do you fix a CEO? Or how do you fix a CEO's mindset so that way employees aren't suffering? I get this all the time. All the time. And that's what we're gonna really dive into this. So Suzanne and I were on Clubhouse the other day. We had this really lovely woman from India pop up, and she was starting to talk about how she was asking us a question, like, how do I deal with this? You know, we've got one employee who just makes a mess for everybody else, and nobody wants to fire him. And it's bringing the company down, and it's an abuse of power. And so there was a little bit for us to unpack in this conversation. And one of the things that I did is I asked her, and I said, okay, so help me understand what you mean by abuse of power. Like, what is your definition of that? And so basically it was, you know, he hires people, you know, with biases, and, you know, he promotes individuals who he likes in the company. And so we had to get very clear. It's like, okay, so I want to make sure that you understand that when I hear abuse of power, I hear quid pro quo, right? I think quid pro quo. Somebody's getting ahead in exchange for something else that's unethical. And in quid pro quo, you know, we're talking about sexual harassment. So that there's that version of it. Then there could be another version of it. Like, somebody could say, well, I'll do this for you if you sabotage this or get your hands on something else. Abuse of power is intentionally treating people like crap, you know, getting their hopes up, and really just, quite frankly, being very abusive towards them. And what I mean by that is, let's say, for example, they, you know, you have a leader who's commits to, you know, supporting somebody who's going on vacation for like 3 weeks to Europe. And literally 48 hours before that person leaves, which, as you well know, their mind is cranked, right? They're focused in on knocking out the work. They're focused in on, you know, what do I need to pack? Are the, you know, the pets going to be cared for? Do we have enough food for them? You know, is the house walk, you know, is the house watcher coming over? Blah, you know, they just got a lot of that stuff on. And then this person comes up and out of nowhere says, hey, I can't let you go. And you, excuse me, I can't let you go. We need you. The business needs you right now. We got a big thing, and I just can't let you go. But there's no real true solid reason behind it, right? And next thing you know it, that employee is now in this position where they're thinking, like, holy shit, what am I going to do? Like, this is, and then their whole world flips upside down solely for the enjoyment of the leader who says, I can't let you go, right? That's an abuse of power, right? So once we got through that, it was really just, he's making bad calls, right? He's just not a good, he just doesn't hire people that serve the company purpose. He hires people that serves his purpose. It's more ego rather than ethics. And so we got through all of that. And we asked her, I said, okay, so this person, is he senior level manager or is this the actual CEO? She goes, no, he's a senior level manager. And I, you know, I looked at Suzanne and I'm like, you mind if I take this one? She's like, go ahead. I was like, okay. So I said, first off, when you're dealing with somebody like that, you know, we kind of cut through and we got very, very clear on what our definition of abuse of power was versus, you know, hiring through bias, right? Or just, you know, being terrible at being a manager or a leader. And I said to her, I said, here's the deal. I said, if this person is not the CEO, but has and wields influence in the company, it's the CEO's problem. And she got real quiet. And I said, the CEO needs to be the one to address this. This is not an HR issue. this is a CEO issue. And she's like, well, you know, the problem is that people are now saying that HR isn't doing their job. And I said, yeah, no, I get that. I said, that is unfortunately one of the consequences that happens when a CEO doesn't do his job. Because I'm going to tell you right now, HR cannot control a person like that if the CEO is not setting the appropriate expectations, and if the CEO is not holding that person to a set of expectations, because that person has impact in the company. So it's either one of two things. It's either the CEO is afraid to do it and won't admit it, or the CEO simply doesn't know how to do it. Well, all right, maybe there's a third one. Or the CEO doesn't see the problem in the same scope as everybody else does, quote unquote, because I don't know who everybody else is, right? Or this HR person and is either unaware of what this person is doing or has a different view of what that person contributes to the organization and takes away. So it's a complicated situation. And if you've been in this, which I guarantee you probably have at some point, if you haven't, you will, that this is something you have to be prepared for in HR, because this plucks our HR nerve to no end. I mean, to no end, because it's one of the problems we can't fix. We cannot apply any of our HR tools to directly fix this. So the question therefore lies as to, well, how do we fix this? Like, oh my God, what do we do? And this has been a consistent and constant question in my mind, because I haven't just run into this once. I've run into this to my entire career, entire Fortune 500 companies. I've run into it, you know, consulting, shoot, well over what I'm up to, like what, almost 700 company leaders right now. And when I provide any type of value or feedback, I'm consulting. That's the way I look at it. So I touch a lot of employers. I touch a lot of leaders, and I touch a lot of their businesses as a result. I may answer short questions. I may answer long-winded ones. To me, I'm consulting. Right? I'm helping somebody figure something out. We throw that in the consulting box. And so I see it everywhere, all over the place. This is the hardest thing to figure out, because at the end of the day, it is on the CEO to address this. It really is. And I'll give you an example. When, I can't tell you which company it is I work for. I gotta be very careful here. And if you guys are in HR, I know you respect this. So I had a position in the field of human resources. I'll tell you exactly which one. But we brought in a gentleman who didn't fully meet the qualifications of the position, but he had skills and talents that the company felt that they needed in order to move something forward. So they took a step back, and I wasn't involved in any of this, by the way, even though I should have been. They took a step back, and they took a look at, okay, so let's restructure the position. Basically, what they did is they built the position around the person, which you don't do. You do not do, and here's the reason why. This person came in, and as a influential leader, a person who was going to be in a position of influential leadership, not to the level that they once thought that he was, that this position should have been at, but he inflicted it. And because he was friends of one of the C-suite members, he got away with a lot of stuff. And it wasn't stealing, it wasn't anything like that. It was taking a boulder and throwing it into a puddle as far as morale, it was, just treating people with respect. There was none whatsoever. He decided that he was going to come after me. And I'm like, well, game on, big boy. So, because I don't play that. And long story short, when I decided to make my own change in the world, I was happy to get rid of this guy out of my environment. It was probably the one person I was the most happiest leaving behind, because this was a situation to where leadership made a decision without me and paid the price for it. But here's the thing, when I did bring up the harassment that was reported to me, I was point blank told by both leaders, both decision makers in the company, that would never happen. We know this person better. That would never happen. And I knew that this was not going to get any better. I was not going to be effective. And this is only going to get worse. I got out. That was the decision that I made. And it was a risky one, but it was the right one for me. And that so far has been the only solid resolution that I could come up with to where I could continue looking at myself in the mirror and feeling good about who I am, what I stand for, and the decisions that I make in this profession. I could not, in good conscience, continue doing the work that I was doing with this organization, knowing full well that there was a tyrant on the loose. I decided to leave that to somebody else. And I also suspected that the person that they were going to bring in was not at my level, not at my experience, certainly not with my core values. And in fact, when I was doing a preliminary review of the resumes, I specifically said, this person right here, I would not consider bringing in. Here's the reason why. They don't meet your expectations, blah, blah, blah. They brought that person in. So I left an organization that's still thriving today that I learned about a week and a half ago. I learned about a week and a half ago that that person that they terminated is now no longer, or that person that I was talking about is now no longer with the organization. Imagine that. They got new leadership in, and that leadership went, no. No, no, no. No, this is not happening on my watch. Very, very distinct difference in approach. So I'm sure there's a lot more that is cycling around, a lot more decisions and a lot more weeding of the bad weeds, plucking of the bad weeds in the garden, that company is going to continue to move forward and thrive. Thrive even better than they were before, because they just don't have that toxicity. They're going to have other issues. No doubt. It's just normal, right? It happens in business. You're going to have issues. You have to expect you're going to have problems. You have to expect you're going to have people problems. You have to expect you're going to have process problems. If you are somebody who believes that you can set up an HR infrastructure, put the period to the end of the sentence when the project is done and everything's going to be cherry and rosy, that is not a realistic view. It really isn't. And you've got to change your thinking. And I say this lovingly because I've seen this so many times. But let's get back to the topic. And that is, what do you do? Now, here's the advice that we gave the woman on Clubhouse. And that was, and I'm outside, by the way, like doing my morning 45-minute walk outside in December. So there's some wind, and my nose is a little runny because of it. My eyes are watering. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm committed. So the thing that we were chatting with her about was some possible takeaways. So you're not, if you have a leader, let me just knock this one out right now. If you have a leader or CEO who is afraid or is unwilling to actually address everything, you are going to have a very hard time getting that person to buy into dealing with the situation. You're just going to, because they're not going to see the benefits and the cost on the soft side of this. And what I mean by that is the interpersonal stuff, the intangibles, right? The intrinsic side of things. And if you don't know what I mean by intrinsic means that their intrinsic is a, it's like something that holds a value that's important to a particular person. Extrinsic is something of value that is held by the organization. Okay. Our intrinsic value structure gets plucked in this kind of situation because making sure that employees are happy is important to us in this world. Not as a professional, but as an individual. So understand that when you're upset or you're disappointed that you put forth a really good idea, a really good recommendation, you called out a bad problem, and that situation isn't resolved, met, supported, that's plucking you intrinsically. Just know that, right? It's not ego. It's just what you deemed as having value, what's most important to you, right? But your intrinsic values and the company's extrinsic, they don't always align. Matter of fact, they rarely align. Rarely. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the way it is. So going back to what we were saying, if you, I know some of you, and there's actually quite a few people that have taken my course. I have a course out there, and that is How to Gain More Buy-In with Your CEOs. It's a free course. If you want to learn more about it, just hop on over to BrendaTheHRLady.com website, click on HR University. It's there. You take it. It doesn't cost you anything. And people who have used this course, it doesn't always work when it comes to dealing with these types of issues, right? So know full well that you are going to be challenged and tasked with, this is a big one. So I'm just getting my thoughts back again. I went on a rant. When you approach a CEO, hit them where it counts. And what I mean by that is this. We talked about intrinsic and extrinsic value, okay? What is intrinsically important to a CEO is the financial side of life, right? They have to make good business decisions. They have to. And those business decisions aren't operational, they're financial. That's why they have operational people to make operational decisions. A CEO's responsibility is to the finance and the financial health of the company. And the reason why is because the number one obligation isn't to meet the needs of the shareholder and the stakeholder, it's to keep the doors open so that payroll can continue. That's what it is, right? So when you have a problematic leader of which the CEO is not doing anything in your estimation to address it because you keep getting in all of these complaints and reports, then you've got a tool at the palm of your hands that can help illustrate to the CEO what kind of financial impact bad leadership is making to the organization. Right? The definition of human capital is your employees plus money. It's labor dollars and labor hours. That is the definition of human capital. It's when humans and money converge together in the workplace. And I know there's a lot of people out there, they don't like the term human capital. Well, you know what? Those people aren't looking at it from a financial standpoint because it's a real value in the organization. And you have to if you're going to do anything and get anywhere in this in this field of business and human resources, you absolutely have to. Right? You have to embrace it. You cannot take on any other mindset other than understanding that people and time in the organization have to merge, because it's what you can measure. It's the only thing you can measure, because it's not subjective. It's objective and it's factual. So in this instance, this woman was telling us that turnover is being impacted. Well, guess what? You can compile that data and you can demonstrate and narrow down the turnover in that individual's area of responsibility within the organization. Since it is a higher end leader, that means that hiring and firing are going to be impacted. That means the dollars associated with that now become the crux of the story that you now get to illustrate with the CEO. It's not that they don't understand the intrinsic side of things. It's not that they don't understand the EQI, the emotional intelligence side of things. It gets justified financially, because morale impacts money. When you have good morale, it impacts it positively. When you have bad morale, it impacts it negatively. So if you've taken this course, you now can see, the one that I told you about, you can now see that it matches up with the equation. It resonates with the CEO, because it resonates with the CEO doing his number one job, right? Just keep the doors open so that payroll keeps running. So it resonates. Now, with you approaching him with anything other than an emotional crisis, you can now demonstrate financially. You are now differentiating yourself from all the other problem generators in the organization. And he's going to dial in because you've plucked his nerve. Your HR nerve was smart enough to put money together, and now you plucked his nerve. Now you've got his attention. So you've just differentiated yourself. And here's the great part. What measures gets improved. Money is something that is constantly being evaluated in the organization. The decisions around money are constantly being evaluated in an organization. That means that when they bring in a bad leader, or they make a decision, they put a person in place who therefore becomes a bad leader, and now it impacts, they are, even though they promote somebody, they need to know what their return on investment is. And the ROI, those KPIs, those key performance indicators, those metrics that you guys identify as a company, guess what? That's what substantiates everything. Make sense now? Because what gets measured gets improved. Now you are going to have on occasion in a CEO that's going to ignore even all of that. And that's the part that's going to make you really go crazy. Because you're like, I did everything you said, Brenda. I said, yes, I know. I got that. But sometimes you have CEOs that just will not take the charge. And that puts you in a very compromised position. Ethically, morally. When you get up, brush your teeth, and you look at that person in the mirror, or you go to bed at night, and you're trying to figure out, like, how can I survive this? Because I feel like crap as a person. I feel like literal shit as a human being. Then you have to make the determination what you're going to do. Are you going to stay and continue to fight the battle? And if so, for how long? Until leadership changes over. Because when leadership changes over, that does not mean that you and HR are the shining star. You have to start all over again with a brand new leader and demonstrate your value and worth. And remember, I've told you guys, if you've been following me long enough, you've heard me say this. You have to know what the number one business objective is. You have to know what the CEO's people problems are and what the CEO's process problems are. What happens, do you think, when you get a new leader in? like things just automatically immediately get better. No, they don't. It's a whole new set of problems. Whole new change dynamic just occurred. Huge. It is the biggest change curve you will experience is that when you get a new CEO into the company. Because your hopes and your dreams are gonna rise. Like, oh, this is great. You know, this asshole is just not addressing anything. He's gone. He's out. We're done. Now we got this person here. They're gonna save the world. They're gonna ride in on the white horse. And you know it because we all do it, right? I've done it too. Like, I get excited when I get new leadership in because there's new possibility, new potential. I've learned to experience is that, yes, that's the great side of things. But guess what? That person's not perfect either. And there's going to be a problem. There's going to be problems that are coming out of that individual. That individual may not even stay around for very long, right? And they get to go through it again. So that's how this works. So you have to be able to, at the end of the day, look at yourself in the mirror and say, can I survive this? And still come out with my integrity in check. Knowing full well that you are now in that position of being negatively looked upon in the view of HR. Look, HR can't be perfect at everything. Start believing that. Start buying into that reality. Because if you are still trying to fix everything and have everybody come out and everything being all sunshiny and in an ideal world, it is not realistic. And you will burn yourself out through individual stress. And that directly relates to our topic today on what happens when the CEO doesn't deal with a problematic leader. How do you fix that? You can't. The only thing that you can do is look at yourself in the mirror and assess and analyze you, yourself, your position in all of this. Not, don't look, and look, don't take on a scarcity approach on this one at all. Don't sit there saying, oh my gosh, you know, like I could be next. I could get fired next. Well, you know what? That's fine. Let them fire you. And I say that with a lot of confidence because you are now marketable. If you've been listening to this podcast, if you've been following what I'm doing, you've been executing and implementing stuff, and you've been in HR, and you've had wins, and you've had successes, and you've made like really, really great shit happen. And yes, I'm saying it a lot today. I'm in mood. I'm moving. I'm in an alpha state of mind because that's what happens when you exercise, right? When you do that, guess what? You're marketable. And yeah, look, losing our job, it drops us to that level of fear, and Maslow's hierarchy of needs comes raging in, you know, like a meteor about ready to smash into a small moon. Right? It's just the way, you know, it stuff happens. Right? We start getting fearful about, oh my gosh, are we going to be able to provide for ourselves? Are we going to be able to, like, don't worry about that. Don't let the immediacy of fear get you if you have been getting your ducks in a row. And here's what I mean by that. Get your house in order. Get your money in place. Look, if you put away $150 every paycheck, which I know for some of you is a stretch, I totally respect that. But if you find a way to cut back on, I wouldn't say frivolous spending, but spending that doesn't move you forward, and you're able to put away $150 and either invest it or save it into an account that has some sort of compounding interest to it. You do that for 12 months, excuse me, $150 every paycheck for 8 years. You aren't just going to save $28,000 and $28,500. All of that is going to compound over the years. You get to that retirement age, you're knocking on millions. And I wish somebody had taught me that lesson when I started early on in life. Get your house in order first before you make a move. I know some of you are listening to this, they're like, oh my God, yes, I'm right in the middle of this right now. Get your house in order. Right? Look, it's a new year. I wipe the slate clean every year financially. I take a look at everything that I do and I cut out BS spending that I do, and I do it too. I get my house in order every January. I make my plans in October. I execute and set myself up for success in November and December. In January, I financially wipe the slate clean and I financially start over. I cancel things. Don't go canceling my subscriptions, though. I love you guys. I want you to have access to good information. Don't go doing that. I almost set myself up. Don't. I'm working on bringing you value all the time. But get your house in order. Right? How many times do you have to subscribe to the same HBO channel in 7 different venues? Think about that. I've made that mistake. Get rid of that. Right? Tone it down to one. How many streaming channels do you need for $14.99 a month or $7.99 or whatever it is, right? Take a look at your subscriptions on your phones. How many do you have that you're not using? Trim that fat and take what you were spending and start putting it away to yourself because clearly you weren't missing it before, right? So get your house in order. Get yourself in a position that if you had to leave quickly, that you can do it. Here's something else. And this is a fun challenge for you to do for the year. I started doing this and I'm well on my way. The 100 envelope challenge. I just thought it was fun, right? I need fun and creative things to do. And I know I'm kind of like getting a little off topic here, but this serves a greater purpose. So in 100 envelope challenges, you take 100 envelopes and I got 100 of those little tiny coin envelopes. And I wrote the denomination like from $1 all the way up to $100, right? So you have, you know, one envelope is one, another envelope that's $2, $3, so forth, so on, all the way to up to 100. And then I shuffle them up randomly, right? Put them in a little bucket. And when I get paid, like when I bring money in, every time I bring money in, every time I bring money in, every month, I pull out an envelope because I get paid in a wide variety of ways. I get paid to speak and all sorts of stuff. So I'll pull an envelope, and if it says $15, I'll go get $15 in cash. I'll stick it in that envelope, and then I tuck it away. And when you complete the 100 envelope challenge, I hope you're sitting down, you're going to have $5,000, $5,001 to be exact, when you get done in cash. It won't be earning any money, but you'll have cash. And why not have that as your in-house emergency savings? You're not putting $150 away every month to meet this. You're grabbing pocket change. You're grabbing, you know, most people don't use cash these days, right? We all swipe either a physical credit card or something on our phone. We hit a button, right? If you have $5,000 in cash as emergency backup money, how comfortable would you be if you had to pull the trigger and leave your job because ethically you couldn't do it anymore? Probably a lot better, right? Even if you get comfortable in a job and things are doing well, don't go spend that $5,000. Keep it as an emergency backup. You're going to need it at some point in time. Car breaks down. You need a down payment on a vehicle, right? That is for holy shit, Maslow's hierarchy of needs crisis kind of money, right? Do that, because that's what I'm doing. You know, and I don't do bad. But what happens if my bottom falls out? The good news is that if you're doing the work in this industry, in this field, you are marketable. That's like my whole point, right? You're marketable. You have to make this decision. Can you stay or should you go? And I've had this conversation before with you guys. But get yourself in a position so that way when people are coming to you about a bad leader and you don't know how to handle it, or you recognize that this isn't something that you're going to resolve, and you get really, really good with that, like in your heart, you're solid with that mindset. Get yourself financially in a position so that if you have to pull a trigger on the decisions you make in your own life, to get ahead, be prosperous, be happy, and continue to help other people, then you're able to do it. And I'm going to tell you right now, don't sit there and get guilty about leaving a company, leaving all those people behind. You know what? They're going to be fine. I promise you. Because they are facing exactly the same decision as you are. Do I stay or do I go? And you guys all have to answer that question for yourselves. You cannot sit in a horrible situation, be constantly beat down, because you're doing this for the welfare of somebody else, to never get a resolution for that. If you're willing to make a fight for something, make a fight. Just make sure that you're making a fight for an outcome that's better. But when you're in a losing battle, or on shrinking ground, or whatever metaphor you want to use for that, you have to take care of yourself. You ever notice that all these things that I talk about tend to fold right back in? Taking care of yourself, getting your house in order, right? Yeah, all comes in together. Do your work, study, make sure that you're knowledgeable in the field of HR, not just for your own current situation, but for future situations, because you are marketable. But you have to be able to get to that point. If you want to make the kind of money you want, if you want to work for the kind of company that you want to work for, if you want to have the level of happiness in your career, and if you don't want to have burnout, because you will in this business. In the business of HR, you will burn out at some point, and you'll burn out multiple times. You will just stop wanting to own the issue after a little while and have some peace in your life, and there's nothing wrong with that. But again, you have to be marketable to do it. So that where we're ending this may seem like a far cry away from the beginning of the topic that I was talking about, but it isn't. Because I told you, remember in the beginning, this is something I've never been able to fully answer. Like, how do you fix this? And the more I think about it, and I've been toggling this in my head, I kid you not, for 15 years. 15 years, this little scenario has been rolling around in my noodle. It is like a polished stone at this point, trying to figure out what is the answer to this. I feel like some yogi on top of a mountain trying to figure this out. But I'm convinced that there may not be an answer, even though I'm still willing to ask the question. There may not be an answer. Because at the end of the day, the truth of the matter is that you can't control somebody else. You can't do it. And people are going to make their minds up based off of what's important to them and what's not. If it's important to you and it's not important to the CEO, you're going to have a decision that you have to make. That is eventually what you're going to be up against. Unless that CEO is going to be leaving sometime soon, right? And you get a new one that comes in. Because usually when they come in at some point in time, they start trimming fat, right? Make sure that you have your ducks in a row to be able to have that conversation. So the question at the end of the day that you have to ask yourself when it comes to how do you fix a CEO is, can you survive this in your heart, in your soul, in your conscience? Can you survive something like this? And know it's going to be hard, but do not let you as a person compromise your health and your well-being, either financially, emotionally, mentally. Don't want to do it, okay? Do not put yourself in that position. If you're starting to pop Xanax because you're anxious at work and you're an HR person, time to take a step back. Because I've been there and I've popped the Xanax. And that's when I realized it was time to take a step back.